Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, May 18th, welcome, friends, on into the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
More and more Americans than ever are rejecting the labels Democrat and Republican. According to Gallup, a record high of 45% of adults, nearly half the country, now identifies as politically independent. And here in Pennsylvania, about 1.5 million voters are registered as independent, and they will be locked out of tomorrow's primary election. That means they will not be able to cast a ballot for Republican or Democratic candidates. And it's a pretty big deal, because it means that they don't get to vote in critical races like the third district race we've been talking about so much on this show, which is basically a race that is decided in the primary. And now there is a lawsuit pending where some independent voters are asking the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to open up primaries. And so today, ahead of May 19th, our primary day here in the Commonwealth, we're looking at what's driving the rise of independent voters, what it says about our state of politics, and we're also asking whether it's time for Pennsylvania to now open up the primaries.
Abby. Open it up.
Open it up.
Is it time?
Should we do it? So we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Why do you think more and more people are identifying as independent? And if you are an independent voter, we'd love to hear from you about why you identify that way. And if you have some thoughts about opening up the primaries, we'd love to hear that as well. The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on Facebook and YouTube, you could put your comments and stories in the chat.
Yeah, and if you're registered as an independent in Pennsylvania, you're really giving up a lot of power. Right? And so it must be a strong conviction. So I'm curious why you would, you know, register as an independent, which is different than identifying as an independent, right? That registration thing is really what limits the power of your vote in this particular Commonwealth. So again, that number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Let's stay on the topic of politics as we get into our trio of local headlines with Pennsylvania's primary election coming up tomorrow. As we mentioned, there's a lot of focus on that top of the ticket. Congressional races, for instance. But there is a battle brewing way down the ballot that pits the old guard against some reform-minded foes. Great story by Jimena Condi of the Philadelphia Inquirer about a group called Wards That Work. They've recruited about 350 folks to run as Democratic committee people. You are asking, what's a committee person? Well, Philly is divided politically into 66 wards. In each ward, the major parties have an elected leader. That leader is chosen by the committee people, who are also, you know, have input and, you know, get out the vote efforts, some relatively minor budget decisions. But basically, they're like the foot soldiers for the Democratic Party here in Philadelphia. And so this group, Wards That Work, is, you know, left of center, and they're seeking some new blood to shake up the party. They've recruited committee people or prospective committee people with more of a younger, maybe more progressive vibe. Now, the powers that be in the local Democratic Party are pushing back, spending money to shore up incumbents. Again, these hyper-local elections. So it's an interesting little dynamic about the future of the party playing out on kind of like the cellular level of politics here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, and if you don't live in Philly or you kind of ignore politics, you may not know how powerful and important these folks are. I mean, some people are saying, look, some of these folks in these positions, they've been there forever, like decades. They've gotten old. Maybe they've dialed it in and don't reflect the will of the constituents anymore. And so they're like, look, this has lowered the turnout from the Democratic Party. It's time to get some new blood in there, get some energy in there, some folks who can actually go door to door, whip up the vote. And a lot of talk about this came up in 2024 when the turnout for Democrats was not what they needed it to be for Kamala Harris. And so, of course, she lost here in Pennsylvania. But like, people are really trying to dissect what happened and get some new blood in there.
Yeah. And you say it might not seem important, but if it wasn't important, they wouldn't be pushing back.
Exactly.
Right. So it shows you that collectively this group of people does have some power. And 350, it seems like a lot, but I think there are almost 7,000 of these committee people around the city. So that's just
it's a lot of open seats, like 3,300 open seats. So it shows that they need people.
Yeah, it's interesting. I just, again, and it gets to this larger question question about where's the party headed and old guard versus new guard. And it's just like a little illustration of a larger issue.
Yeah. And the thing is, if you get involved, maybe, you know, you'll get your friends involved and the neighborhood involved. And so, hey, could be a good thing, right?
Yeah.
Have some new people. Second story, gold.
Gold?
Yeah. It's selling at close to $5,000 an ounce. And folks in our region, they're stepping up and they're cashing in. Cool write-up by the Philadelphia Inquirer about the increase in the price of gold, which is really doubled in the past couple of years. The price of silver has also increased and is now around $100 an ounce. The high prices have people clearing out their basements. They're looking for their late parents or grandparents, gold or silver heirlooms, and they're cashing out right now. Okay. Precious metal buyers have had to staff up to accommodate the rush. So you're probably wondering, like, why in the world is gold, why the price of gold so high? Well, all the uncertainty with the interest rates, politics, and inflation have people wondering about the value of the dollar. And so high net worth individuals are investing in gold. Plus, the new data centers have created a new demand for precious metals as well, which has jacked up all the prices. Mm. And you combine that, the market and the fact that people just need money right now. That's why you have folks looking in their basements and selling stuff. And there was a Bucks County gold dealer featured in that Inquirer article that said sales topped $10 million last year, and they expect their sales to double this year.
And I don't begrudge anyone who's trying to cash in. This is all a little bit grim, though, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
People are, like, you know, searching for their precious family heirlooms. They can be melted down,
yeah.
And it's valuable because people are betting against the future of the entire monetary system. Is that basically what's happening here?
When you say it
here?
Like that, Avi Wolfman, like, Aaron,
doesn't seem great.
Louise.
Doesn't seem great. But I guess, you know, I know what, if you need to do this, of course, go ahead. But it sort of like left me with a bit of a pit in my stomach reading this whole story.
Yeah, but you know, people look, what do I do with this old silver,
sure.
You know,
and sometimes people don't want this stuff.
You know, I'm going to cash in. And I mean, you never know. People got bills. They got credit card debt. And they're like, hey, $5,000. All right, let's go see what we can do.
I take $5,000, too.
You'll take it.
From gold to red now,
yeah.
Okay?
like nice little transition.
Yeah, it was okay.
Little pivot.
It was okay. The Phillies are red hot, and I believe we have a red Muppet to thank for that.
Ooh.
So you might know that the Phillies started the season not doing so well. They fired the manager. They started to recover, actually, after that. Then they started to stumble again, and then last Saturday, they got a visit from Elmo.
Have you enjoyed your day at the ballpark today?
Oh, it's been wonderful, yeah, and Elmo loves the Phillies. Go Phillies, baby!
Yeah. Well, that's because you're red, they're red.
That's true. Very true.
Yes, Elmo. The one and only Elmo visited Citizens Bank Park. He appeared on the broadcast, as you heard there. He hung out with the players. By the way, when Elmo came on the broadcast, the Phillies were losing the game 1-0. The very next half inning, they scored 5 runs to take the lead. They have not looked back since.
Love it.
Since Elmo's appearance, the Phillies are 7-1. They're above 500 for the first time since early April. You could argue the credit belongs to the players and interim manager Don Mattingly. However, I work in public media, so I am going to give credit to Elmo. Thank you, Elmo.
Aw, Elmo, look at him. So cute. And
there
so
he is with the fanatic hanging out.
Yeah, I love it.
That's not Photoshopped at all, folks.
No. I agree. I think it is the famous fuzzy effect. And I should say it happened before. Apparently, Grimace of McDonald's fame visited the Mets in June of 2024. The team had been struggling after that visit. They went on a 5-0 winning streak. So it's not unheard of. And I do attribute this to Elmo. Yeah.
So that
famous fuzzy effect.
That means we need other Sesame Street characters to visit the other team.
Yeah. Yeah.
So obviously, Big Bird should visit the Sixers. Because we need center depth, and he's 8'2".
That is true.
And he's tall, and he's never injured, so he could give us some tips on how to stay healthy.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So I'm thinking for the Flyers, friend of the show, Betsy Kenny, comedian, nominated Cookie Monster, because I think he kind of has the same energy as Gritty.
Gritty, yeah.
And also a hockey puck is shaped like a cookie.
Yeah, and he could totally just tear those pucks up.
Absolutely. Eagles are tough.
Yeah.
I was going to say maybe Ernie because his head is shaped like a football.
Okay. You work? Gave this a lot of thought. I love it.
I gave this too much thought. I think for the Union, I go with the Count. because okay. he's got like a foreign European vibe, and that's a big sport over there.
That is very true.
And then who's left? Who have I not talked about? Have I got everybody?
I think you did. I mean, unless there's, I think you got all the pro teams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's my 5-step plan for fixing Philadelphia sports. Sesame Street characters, they all have to visit. Thank you, by the way, Elmo. You're the best.
Operation.
I've really come around on Elmo. I used to find him annoying, and now I really find him endearing.
I love Elmo. I mean, he brightens my day, and why wouldn't he brighten the day of the Phillies? I mean, go Phils.
Go Phils.
Now they're on the streak. Let's continue that streak, by the way.
And let's continue Studio 2 after this brief message. We're talking about independent voters today and whether they should be allowed into the Pennsylvania primary system. Get your calls in.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Pennsylvania's primary is tomorrow, but there's one group that will be locked out of voting in it. That is independents. Roughly 1.4 million people in the Commonwealth are registered as independent, but our closed primary system means that only registered Democrats or Republican voters can cast a ballot.
Over the last decade or so, the number of people who identify as politically independent has surged, now at 45%, according to Gallup. That's nearly double the share of people who count themselves as either Republican or Democrat.
So this hour, why are so many people shunning the two political parties and calling themselves independent? What does it mean for our politics and elections? Why aren't we seeing more independent candidates? And is it time to open Pennsylvania's primaries to all voters?
We've got two great guests joining us this hour. David Thornburg is an independent and longtime good government advocate. He's chair of Ballot PA Action and is one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Pennsylvania's closed primary system. David, nice to see you here inside Studio 2.
Thanks so much, Ari. Avi, good to be here.
And also let me welcome Samara Klar, professor of political science at the University of Arizona. She's co-author of the book Independent Politics. Samara Klar, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And for you, our listeners at home on the road or elsewhere, we'd love to hear from you as well. Why do you think more people are identifying as independent? And if you are an independent voter, what does being an independent mean to you? We'd love to hear from you. Also, if you have thoughts about opening up the primaries, the number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our Facebook and YouTube streamers, you can comment in the live chat.
Interesting email from Phil, who says, I have been an independent voter for 3+ decades. I am to the left of the Democratic Party and thoroughly dissatisfied with the performance of both parties throughout my entire lifetime. My values are important to me, even though I can see the practicality of influencing intra-party politics through the primary. So let's get a sense of scope here, Samara. How big is the shift toward independent affiliation, formal affiliation, and identification in this country? Can you give us some numbers or some broader context to help us understand whether this is a little short-term trend or a larger, longer-term trend?
This is a long-term trend that we've been seeing for several decades now, where consistently a growing percentage of Americans do not want to publicly identify with either party. And we see this in a lot of different kind of data. We see this in registration numbers. As you mentioned, we see it more often sort of in how people just choose to identify themselves, regardless of their registration. We also see, you know, more and more people saying they don't like either party, neither party represents them. So this isn't a one-off. This isn't something that we're just seeing in recent years. This is a long-term trend that seems to be sticking around for a while.
Can we broadly say why?
Well, I've done a lot of research where we have been surveying independents. We've been doing experiments and studies on nationally representative samples of Americans. And, you know, there's some myths about independents that are not true. Independents are typically very informed, very engaged. Independents are not confused. They're not abstaining from voting. In fact, independents are often quite ideological. They have very cohesive policy preferences. The caller that you just mentioned, he said he's an independent, but he's to the left of the Democratic Party. That's not a moderate. That's a person who's liberal, who's leftist, but doesn't feel that either party represents them. what we've been finding is this attraction to independence, it's not based on moderate ideology. It's based on a dissatisfaction with partisan politics in the United States. And it's specifically driven by the hostility, the anger, the aggression that we see from our political elites that most Americans don't think represent them.
I want to read this comment from David on YouTube who says, I wish everyone was an independent voter. Too many people simply adopt the same ideas as their political party without any critical thought to the issue. And so David Thornburg, longtime independent, want to bring you into the conversation. So you're an independent. Tell us your story of evolving to make that choice.
Well, let me just underline. Thank you. Let me underline first our friend from Arizona State, all of the above. That's all great stuff and really important insights. I am an independent for both professional and personal reasons. I was born and raised a Republican. My father was, a wonderful Republican governor of this Commonwealth and then George Bush's attorney general. So I've spent more time as a Republican in my life than elsewhere. The party moved away from me. And I also, in my career, found myself in civic leadership roles where, not unlike journalists, I didn't want to be pigeonholed into one party or the other. You're carrying the water for these folks or those folks.
And this is publicly available information, whether or not you're registered as a Democrat or a Republican.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So I became an independent, but I have to say, I live in Philadelphia, and it drives me crazy that I am locked out of this process. So sometimes I will temporarily register as a Democrat and then flip back. I've temporarily registered as a Republican, too. So that's my story. And it is important to know that independence is really hard to pigeonhole them.
Yeah. And explain that, because you've been out, you've worked in good government, you've done a lot of advocacy on behalf of voting rights, et cetera. What have you seen with regard to the people who you've met who sort of either do the flip-flop or just decide, you know what, I'm going to identify as independent and stay that way.
Yeah. Not many people are like me who sort of flip back and forth.
Yeah.
Because it's one more thing to keep track of, you know? I will say, though, that it does begin and end almost with this dissatisfaction with the state of our politics and the state of our parties. People are pissed. They're just plain pissed. They don't like what they see. The money that's pouring into elections, I think, is really disturbing to folks.
Yeah.
So it's a comment about the state of affairs.
Sort of a vote against the system, in a sense.
Yeah. And, you know, it's always worth remembering, like, we have not had primary elections or even voter registration forever. These are relatively recent developments, like last 100 years. So, you know, from our perspective, those of us who are advocating for change, we just got to change it again. That's the great American way. That's the American experiment. And that's the hill that we're trying to climb.
And just to clarify, independents can still vote for other items like ballot questions.
Yeah, but yes.
They just cannot vote for party candidates. And so there are repercussions to making that political decision.
Right. And I heard that the turnout, you're absolutely right, in Pennsylvania. Having said that, the turnout of independents in primary elections is about 2%.
Right. It's very low.
Because they
Like I'm voting, got to vote, you know, by tomorrow, and I get to vote on two ballot questions. It takes me 30 seconds and that's it.
Yeah.
Not very satisfying and helpful to our local democracy.
Yeah. And I just to clarify something we said earlier as well, I think about 1.1 million people in Pennsylvania are registered as independents. And there's about 300,000 or so who are registered with parties other than Democrat or Republican.
Yeah, that's not quite true.
Okay.
I put both of them together. And you get into the weeds of how voters are classified. But the two minor parties in Pennsylvania are the Greens and the Libertarians.
Yep.
That's a small percentage of the other.
Right.
That you'd add into. So it is generally fair to say 1.4 million independents.
Okay. Let me read a few more comments in. Sean says, I identify as independent because the Democrats have failed to effectively curb Republican domination through dirty politics. Both parties are failing the people. Mm-hmm. Similar comment from Otis, who says, I haven't left the Democratic Party, but I can tell you that people are leaving because nobody delivers. The Republican Party is full of hate and bigotry. The Democratic Party doesn't deliver any real results when they have the power. So the everyday citizen says none of this matters. I'm screwed Anyway, yeah. Let's bring in a caller. This is Angelique from Montco on line two. Angelique, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment about independent voters and open/closed primaries?
Yeah, so I am the executive director of an organization called PAUFO, and so we work with young people all the time. And we are seeing increasingly more and more young people are disinterested with being affiliated with one party or another, and that's because they have seen both parties fail to deliver or be responsive to the things that they really care about. So things like school funding, school closings, just so many things, recreational programming that they want to see just aren't, you know, being prioritized by either party, and they're very frustrated. So they'll register as independent, and they actually will flip back and forth a lot of times. Yeah. They will register, yeah. So they'll register to vote in the primary, and then they will flip back to independent after the primary is passed.
Thanks, Angelique. I want to actually get Samara Klar back in the conversation, because we said that there isn't necessarily an ideological thread that binds all of these sort of disaffiliated voters together. However, are there demographic trends that tend to tie them together? And we heard there from a caller saying that lots of young people don't want to register with either of the major parties. Are there other things like that that we see in the data?
Yeah, you know, the most common question I get asked about independents is, if there's so many independent voters, which there are, why don't independent candidates win? Mm-hmm. And the answer is exactly what you just said. Independents are not a cohesive voting bloc. It's very rare to get one independent candidate, it's impossible, who could represent this very diverse group of people. Some are liberal, some are conservative. They vary in all sorts of ways. When it comes to demographics, I will say I have not found any consistent patterns over time. There are elections where maybe they lean a little more female or male. Sometimes they lean a little younger. But over time, independence, the appeal of political independence appeals to all Americans, because I think the feelings that you're describing of dissatisfaction are not unique to just some groups. Now, I will say that in recent years, the youngest voters have been demonstrating a really high level of cynicism about politics. Yeah. And I do suspect that possibly we might see an uptick in independence among young voters relative to older voters. The data are still not fully in on that, because these are young voters. We haven't had that much time to bug them with surveys. But, you know, I said to my, I teach here, you know, I teach undergraduate students at the university here. And I said recently, you know, how many of you would feel comfortable wearing a button for your preferred party during the election? And none of them raised their hand.
Wow.
So I said, well, is that because you don't want to introduce politics into conversations, or you don't want to offend anyone? And they said, no, we don't like either party. And it's just seeing this sort of level of dissatisfaction. It's really disheartening.
And we have an email from Lewis who says, I registered as an independent when I turned 18. Then I found out I was cut off from the primaries. I registered as a Democrat ever since. So, you know, my quick follow up to you, Samara, is, you know, do these voters tend to lean one way or the other? You know, even though they're independent, do they tend to vote one way or the other? Do you see that at
yes.
all as a trend?
Oh, yes. The vast majority of independents lean toward a party and consistently do vote for that party. And, you know, for that reason, political scientists kind of gave up on independents in sort of the early 90s. They said, well, why bother studying these independents? Most of them prefer a party, and most of them ultimately vote for that party. So there's really nothing interesting here. Now, what I've been doing with co-authors over the last decade or so is to try to figure out, if you're always voting for the same party, why not identify with that party? And that's where we really started to understand the level of dissatisfaction, particularly with the aggression that they're seeing, not necessarily among their fellow Americans, because truthfully, there's not that much partisan aggression, you know, among neighbors or friends. But, you know, when they're reading the news, when they're watching candidates, when they're watching debates, and they're hearing political candidates say these horrible things to each other, that's when people say, okay, that does not represent me. I might be a Democrat or I might be a Republican, but I don't feel that level of hatred that we're seeing on the news, that we're seeing in Washington. And so I'm not part of that party. Mm.
Yeah. And David, you wanted to add something there?
Yeah. I want to push back a little bit on that narrative, because when we say they lean one way or the other, it's a little bit like someone who loves Mexican food being presented with like a burger menu. Right. Like, well, I'd rather have Mexican, but at the end of the day, I got to vote Republican or Democrat. I got to do something. So pick one. The other thing that I think, I mean, you mentioned the young folks. The polling I've seen says about 2/3 of young voters are now registering as independents.
That's
and to me, I mean, this is in Pennsylvania, the frustration and the irony that these are the folks that we're going to turn over this tattered democracy to, and we're shutting them out of the, you know, cutting off the first rung of the ladder into democratic participation, is just unconscionable. It's just wrong.
We'd love to hear from you this hour. We're asking you, why do you think more people are identifying as independent these days? If you are an independent voter, what does being an independent mean to you? Why did you make that decision? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment in the chat. Better Integra on YouTube says, the very first primary I went to vote in, registered non-affiliated in PA. The polling place is where I found out I can't vote for the candidate. They all looked awkward explaining it to me. It's a similar story to one we just heard. Rick Gossi, 5898, also on YouTube, says, hello from New Jersey. I grew up in Chicago, where primaries were, quote, open, but you had to declare which ballot you wanted on election day at the polling place, R or D. It seemed to work. So, David, what is the best system for running these primary elections? Because I assume you're not making the argument there should not be parties that ultimately select candidates, but you're saying it should be done differently.
Well, put it this way. Pennsylvania is now, there are only 8 states left that strictly bar independents from voting in primaries. If you look at the other 42 states, there's about 42 different ways of doing things.
Right.
We don't realize this, but about 19 states don't register people by party at all. So that's mm-hmm. another way around this. And in fact, and we can talk about this later, the lawsuit that we have filed simply is asking the court to rule this practice unconstitutional. Which, flip it around, that independents have a right under our state constitution to vote in every election. But we're not mandating a particular solution to that problem.
Well, what would you like to see, though? What do you think would be best for democracy?
Well, I'll just say that, you know, politics is the art of the possible. Mm-hmm. So the most possible solution that's been proffered in Harrisburg for the last 30 years mm-hmm. is leaving the party primaries intact, but allowing independent voters to vote in one or in one of those primaries.
Which is the right. What we just heard from our friend who grew up in Chicago, essentially. You get to do one or the other.
Yeah. There's, as I said, there's about 16 different flavors
of that.
Of all of that. But the principle is every voter who is a taxpayer and supports these elections should be able to vote in every election.
And by the way, tell us about this lawsuit, because you are a plaintiff in this lawsuit, yeah. as well as other independent
yeah,
voters.
Yeah, the lead plaintiff is Michael Smirkanish, who I'm sure is familiar to some of your viewers and listeners, the CNN host, who has built a career as an independent journalist. The lawsuit is filed in state court and is drawing on a clause in the Pennsylvania Constitution that's been there from day one that says elections in Pennsylvania shall be free and equal. And that's been interpreted by the courts, notably in the 2018 decision about gerrymandering and drawing maps, that the state can't favor one class of voters over another class of voters.
And the argument is?
That unequivocally, this system favors partisan voters over independent voters. And we actually brought in a mathematician from Carnegie Mellon who sort of threw the data against that. And it's pretty clear in our view.
Let me bring in another caller. This is Jason from South Philly on line 3. Jason, you're on Studio 2. Curious for your perspective on this conversation about independent voters here in Pennsylvania.
Hello. My name is Jason. I've been registered as a Democrat, Republican, and Independent, mostly because I came from a mixed household politically. But through time, I realized that I wasn't going to be served by either party. I'm on the older age of young. I'm 31, but I now work at a nonprofit where in West Philly, where I work with majority young black Philadelphians from West Philly that are completely disenfranchised with the electoral process, mostly for the same reasons I was when I was younger, because there's nothing for them on the docket. There's nothing to vote for that will materially improve young people's situation that's even being discussed. And every time it does get discussed, it seems that those things get hoodwinked.
And so quick follow up to you, Jason. Are you seeing that a lot of these young people are opting out, or are they opting to be independents like you?
Well, in the case of the nonprofit where I work, they're opting out entirely. They don't believe in the political process, and that might be a difference. You know, these are West Philly, you know, they've never gotten anything from the political, especially national political discourse. Whereas me, I came from the suburbs. I was more disenchanted by the things I saw happening, and I would hop from party to party to try to affect primaries.
Yeah. Thanks, Jason. That's Jason from South Philadelphia. Interesting perspective. We want to bring in another perspective now. We've been talking about this, the growing number of young people calling themselves independent. You just heard it referenced in that last call. So to get a little more insight into why young people seem to be making this decision, we've reached out to Harry Ho, a young independent who's leading a civic journalism project called Independent Pennsylvanians. Harry, thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So have you been listening to the conversation? Does this ring true to you in terms of young people and independence? Is there anything you'd like to add to what you've heard so far?
Sure. I can share a little bit about my perspective growing up from, I guess, the flip side of Jason's. I grew up in an apolitical household, meaning my parents and my family didn't really talk politics when I was younger. And so when it came time to vote for the first time, I didn't really have a party to put down, so I chose unaffiliated. And I guess as I was trying to develop my perspective, I wanted to hear some of the different viewpoints on certain policy issues. I wanted to assess the candidates' positions. So it was more about avoiding a pre-commitment to partisanship that led me to affiliate with neither of the major parties.
Yeah. And so, Harry, I ask you a quick follow-up? I mean, why did you feel, because you are leading a civic journalism, a civic project called Independent Pennsylvanians, why did you feel like there needed to be a project that focused on this group of voters?
Right now, I think there's a lot of great work being done to quantify and categorize independents, but I think there's a lot of nuance that's missed from that. So what I do is I reach out to independent voters, say, hey, can I speak with you for an hour, interview them, and then talk about their experiences. Because these voters are coming to the political polls and deciding based on their values. But where are values coming from? I think it's coming from their personal experience. So someone like Soraya from Lancaster told me how she was frustrated about political polarization, didn't want to be boxed into a category, and her journey with respect to her faith in recent years has also led to her evolve her own political position. So a lot of young voters in their 20s, I think, are really looking for nuance right now. I can give you another case. Joshua from Bucks County studied mechanical engineering from the University of Pittsburgh. He does a lot of work with designing printed circuit boards, and he told me this really interesting metaphor about politics. He says, if you can imagine you're looking at a house, but everyone is just standing on the north side of the house, and looking at it, you can only get 25% of the picture. And you don't really know what's on the other sides. But he said, if you have people on the other sides all looking at it and you're all communicating, you can have a better view of the house and a more informed view. And I think it's the same idea of trying to avoid the partisan boxed categories and looking at things with a fuller perspective that really drives young voters to find a better sense of what they believe in, what's the right way.
Thanks so much, Harry. Well, we appreciate you joining us on Studio 2 and sharing some of your insights with us. That's Harry Ho, young independent, leading a civic journalism project called Independent Pennsylvanians. We're about to go to a break. Let me bring in one more caller before we do. This is Carol from Montco, who I believe is an independent. Carol, you're on Studio 2. Very curious why you decide to be an independent.
Hi. I changed my registration when things got really aggressive with signage and partisanship in the area, a little bit out of fear to be targeted either way. Blue cities, blue states have been targeted by this administration. What's to stop from blue individuals being targeted? You know, we all are on some sort of database, so just out of protection almost.
Yeah.
That's so Carol from Monco.
Thank you, Carol, for that.
So we are asking you this hour, why do you think more people are identifying as independent? If you are an independent voter, why? What does being an independent mean to you? And do you think we should have an open primary system here in Pennsylvania? Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat and don't go anywhere. You're listening to Studio 2 on WHYY.
WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
Welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We're talking about the growing number of Americans who call themselves independents, who do not identify with either the Democrat or Republican parties. And we're looking at the impact this has on our politics, especially in a state like Pennsylvania, where those folks are shut out of the primary system.
Yeah, let me reintroduce our two guests. We have David Thornburg, an independent and longtime good government advocate. He's chair of Ballot PA Action and is one of the plaintiffs in a lawsuit against Pennsylvania's closed primary system. We also have Samara Klar, professor of political science at the University of Arizona and co-author of the book Independent Politics.
Listeners, viewers, why do you think more people are identifying as independent? Are you an independent? Tell us why. Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat.
And I wanted to read a couple comments and then ask a question. Say2 says, tired of the Democratic Party treating me like Lucy treats Charlie Brown with the football. And Dwayne says, I became an independent and encourage more people to do so. To me, the Democratic Party takes the black vote for granted and most Republican policy doesn't take into account social issues. We really need to open primaries in Pennsylvania. That's Dwayne and that's Say2. And so, Samara, I wanted to bring you back into the conversation and just ask, are people, is that one of the reasons that you're seeing? Is that a trend? People feel like, you know what, the only time the party comes to me or to my group is when the elections come and then, boom, they ignore all the things that, you know, I and my group tends to care about. Are you hearing more and more people cite that as a reason why they're opting out?
You know, I think one of the issues is when there's so much, you know, aggression and drama in politics that makes the news, people saying crazy things and just anger and frustration and hostility between the parties, it's very easy for people to miss the sort of quieter details about what parties are trying to do for them. And what I'm hearing so much in this conversation is that people just have no sense of how policies can and can't help them. And I think that is a failure of communication by the parties. I think, you know, there are good politicians out there who are working to make people's lives better. And it is unfortunately being drowned out by the noise of the chaos of contemporary American politics. I mean, I think it's not entirely accurate to say that, you know, neither party cares about anyone. And I understand that feeling. And I absolutely understand how somebody would think that. But what I think that tells us is we need better communication from our representatives. We need for people to understand what parties are doing every day to help them. Because the truth is, elections do matter. And the fact that, you know, my students will say to me, I don't want to vote. It doesn't matter who wins. Nobody's going to represent me. I mean, that's not true. Elections matter. And the person that wins does make a difference. And one of those parties is probably going to represent you better than the other one does, even if it's not perfect. So what I would love to see more of is just better communication and outreach for voters to really understand that.
On that point, interesting comment from Lauren, who says, I think the widespread emphasis on national politics makes civics into a spectator sport because there's so little individuals can do to influence at that level. They use registration as a tool to indicate their disaffection, but this effectively minimizes their voice. I'm curious about what the impact of open primaries is or if there's data on that, Samara, from an academic level. Because look, as David Thornburg pointed out, most states have some sort of open primary process. And yet we have seen increased polarization in states like Pennsylvania and states that have open primaries. So is there a measurable political impact when you go from a closed primary system to an open primary system, or the reverse?
This is a very, a super interesting topic to academics, and there's a lot of work going on right now. And I will say the data are mixed. I mean, there are sort of two goals that people like to see from open primaries. One is just more turnout, whatever that leads to. More turnout is just better, getting more people involved. And the second goal that many people are looking for are more moderate candidates. Now, there's no consistent evidence that open primaries leads to more moderate candidates. Some studies show it does, and some show it have no effect. And even if you listen to the callers who've called in today, many don't participate because they are to the left of the Democrats. So they don't actually want more moderate candidates. They actually want more extreme candidates. So I don't know if we can necessarily assume that open primaries will moderate the candidates, but I think that it intuitively absolutely would increase turnout when more people could participate.
Yeah.
But it seems from academic work that really the biggest barrier is information. Mostly why we don't see people participating, especially in a primary, which is, you know, there's generally not, it's not a presidential election. Mm-hmm. It's not something that people are hearing lots of campaigning about. You have a lot of candidates you've never heard of. And when you don't have really active mobilization, that's what makes it hard for people to participate.
And David, you want to respond? Yeah.
Yeah, I want to drop a powerful factoid into the mix here, which we pointed out in our lawsuit. In by and large, not just Pennsylvania, but across the country, primary elections, as the name might suggest, have dominated.
Mm-hmm.
Pennsylvania, if we looked at the legislature for the last 25 years, 93% of the time, the primary election has been the one that decides who goes to Harrisburg.
Mm-hmm.
So that the great tragedy there is, like, if you're locked out of that election, you have no voice. The secondary effect is, for historical reasons, more people still vote in general elections than they do in primary elections. So then what happens in the primary election is you have a smaller number of more partisan people who are determining who goes to Harrisburg or your county seat or wherever.
Yeah.
And it makes it harder for them to govern in the good old fashioned, you know, sense of compromise. And
yeah, and I want to ask you this question because David Thornburg, Beth says, I do not think independents should be allowed to vote in the primary. If you have not invested your time in working for the party, you should not be allowed to choose the party's candidate and influence the platform, period. What do you say to somebody like Beth, who says, you know what, join the party then if you want to have a comment, if you want to have influence.
I'll start with this, which is that we all pay for elections. It's about $75 million a year. And basic principle, representation and taxation, if I help pay for those, I need to be able to participate. The parties do not control the elections, right? The citizens should control the elections and through the citizens, the state. So that to me is a great starting point for our argument. The second thing is, what does it exactly mean to be a member of a party these days? There is nothing in Pennsylvania in the bylaws that is a litmus test. It's an administrative function. You check a box on the voter registration. So, like, even if I'm, are you encouraging me as an independent to just check the box and get on with it? In which case, I say to folks, I guess we both agree that independents should vote in primaries. You just want to make it more difficult than I do. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
Yeah. Let's bring in another caller. This is Roxanne from Lansdowne on line 5. Roxanne, you're on Studio 2. Curious for your perspective on this conversation about political independence.
Oh, great. Great conversation. I'm a longtime independent voter in my 50s, so I'm not young. Well, young-like. And the issue that I've always had and why it sometimes seems hopeless, I understand the dissatisfaction, is that our democracy is so based on that two-party system that for independence, either you flip-flop and switch and you got to remember all of that stuff. But then in the end, there's really no hope based on the electoral college and where the power is controlled by the two parties that an actual third party can emerge and succeed and win. And so I support, you know, us being able to vote in every election. But it feels like there's so much other work that needs to be done that's broken that will really allow for full, free, and fair elections in the U.S.
Thanks, Roxanne.
Yeah.
Here's a different opinion from Jeff, who says, look, we don't require voters who want to select our leaders to prove adherence to our policies or values or even pay dues. Just tell us who you are so we can communicate with you. If you're not happy with the nominees, you can change your registration to independent after the primary. Kind of say no harm, no foul. Be part of the process, mm-hmm. make your voice heard, and, you know, go from there. And I am curious, like, this is a very anti-party conversation, I think, by nature, Samara, but do political mm-hmm. parties, like, serve a purpose? Having a group of people saying we generally adhere to this general group of values and we're going to try to put forward a vision based on that, and then among ourselves, we're going to decide who we think best represents that. Like, there is there value to that? If so, what is that value? And, you know, if we truly took that system apart, what would be the consequences of it if we even could tell?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest values that parties hold is they make it easier to choose candidates. And the truth is, most people are not on this show, listening to the show, calling this show. They're not thinking about politics all the time. They're not that focused on it. They're paying their rent. They're feeding their kids. They're going to work. They're doing their stuff. And if you can have a really helpful party queue when you vote that says, hey, this is the policy group that has essentially endorsed this candidate, it makes it way easier to vote. And having party labels on ballots dramatically increases turnout. If you can imagine a system where every voter is given a slate of candidates and they don't know which party is affiliated with each candidate, and there are elections like this, and every voter is left to read about every candidate and learn about every candidate and try to figure out how well does this candidate match me, the burden you're placing on citizens is tremendous. So one of the best things we get out of parties is it's a really helpful, useful cue. And in fact, one thing we see in studies, and I know this is, people don't love to hear this, but when voters are voting strictly based on party labels, they do often end up voting for the candidate that does better align with their values.
Yeah, and I guess
everyone hates that idea. Like, oh, if we just vote, check all the R's, they check all the D's. And yeah, it sounds lazy, but it's not lazy. It's a really helpful heuristic that does really help you pick the right candidate.
Yeah, Samara, that's a great point. And I actually want to redirect now to David, because it's like, I know you're not advocating for a no party system or anything like that, but I do wonder, sometimes people are so fed up with the system that they don't consider like the reverse, which is, if you imagine a system where there's no affiliation at all and people are left to sort of do their own research on a huge slate of candidates, then you could imagine a world where someone who's just got the money to just blast their name out there a million times.
Well, we live in that world.
No, but I'm saying, but even more so, yeah, right? Because that label is a bulwark against that to some extent. Like, if I really believe in the Democratic Party and their values, Republican can spend a gazillion dollars and never get my vote. Where if it's just names on a ballot, it might be a little more random.
A couple things. The more that mail balloting sort of seeps in, and there are Western states, Colorado, Utah, that primarily vote by mail.
Yeah.
It's a different equation, because then there's this thing called the internet. You can sit at your kitchen table, look at the candidates, blah, 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 blah. But this is not anti-party. I studied political science at Haverford College. I have a master's from the Kennedy School. I get politics. I get the value of parties. But parties at one point were a lot more inclusive than they are now. Mm-hmm. If you think about the great Democratic coalitions of the last several decades, or there used to be a Northeastern liberal Republican. And they're not anymore. Yeah. And what shows up is 95% of Republicans vote for Republicans and 93% of Democrats vote for Democrats. And there's something wrong with that.
Mm. Yeah. I want to read a couple comments. Frank says, I am independent. I'm a poll worker. Voter turnout in my ward is terrible. The committee people seem more concerned about lunch for poll workers rather than getting people out to vote. And there really seems to be an insider feel about the people holding positions of power, especially when the elected politicians show up for selfies. Luca Bear says, I was sassy with my state rep when he stated Pennsylvania cares about all voters. You cannot claim that when you don't allow independent voters to vote in the primary.
Bingo.
So I want to sort of flip it quickly, David, because we only have a couple more minutes. But like, you know, to me, you know, we're talking about independent voters, but like, if you decide that as a politician in Pennsylvania, you want to run as an independent, it's almost like political suicide. And I bring this up because David Wecht, Supreme Court Justice, announced he is now disaffiliating with the Democratic Party, but he didn't do it until after he won his retention vote. Just your both thoughts about that, because if we really try to fix the structure, you know, you got to make it okay for someone to run as a third party or unaffiliated and actually win.
The discussions about independent voters and the discussions about independent candidates seem related, but they're kind of different. What they have in common, though, is that we've allowed the political parties to write the rules of engagement, the rules of the game. They decide which parties are officially sanctioned, just as they have decided who gets to show up and vote in primary elections. So it may be time for a good old-fashioned constitutional convention here in Pennsylvania, which we haven't had since 1967. to reflect the changes that have happened in our society over the last 50 years.
Yeah. As we get ready to wrap up, Samara Klar, do you see this trend changing anytime soon, or do you think we are headed toward a place of where there's more and more people who tell pollsters that they're independent leaning, or people who straight up disaffiliate in their registration?
Well, I mean, if history is any predictor of the future, it will continue to go up. We've seen it's a linear trend that continues to go on. And, you know, American politics, I always think people are fed up and it's about to change, and then it doesn't. If I were to predict, I would predict more of the same until at least the tone in politics starts to moderate a little bit and we have a little more civility between parties. And then hopefully, I mean, I think in a perfect world, frankly, Democrats and Republicans could be open about who they vote for. It wouldn't be stigmatized. It wouldn't be weird. You could walk into a room with your R hat or your D hat and everybody would be cool with it. I think that's my ideal world. Not that everybody's independent, but that Democrat and Republican is just who you vote for. It doesn't define you, and everybody can, you know, just be cool about it.
Mm. Closing words there from Samara Klar, professor of political science at the University of Arizona and co-author of the book Independent Politics. Samara, thank you so much for your time today.
It was a pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
And thank you, David Thornburg, longtime good government advocate, a chair of Ballot PA Action, part of a group suing the Commonwealth, trying to open up these primaries. Thank you so much, David.
Thanks. We're having our day in court, as they say.
That's right.
We'll wait to hear that ruling there. And of course, we can't do any of what we do without our producers. So thanks to Debbie Bilder, Hazel May Bryan, and Paige Murray Bessler. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Kalike engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. And got a shout out. Thank you to everybody who called in today. Lots of callers from Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We'll talk to you tomorrow.